Hi everyone, I'm Chrissy. I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you. It's fine. It'll pick you up where we're
Okay. I have a sobriety date of April 25th, 2014. I have a sponsor, Jenny R., and I have a home group. I actually have two home groups, technically. Midtown has been my home group since I got sober. That's in Kensington, Maryland on Sunday nights in about an hour and a half. Then I moved about almost two years ago to Frederick, Maryland, from Montgomery County, Maryland. And I have a home group on Saturday nights in Frederick, technically in Middletown, Maryland. It's the Jaywalkers group, also a speaker meeting with 1 hour speaker. It's a great meeting if you're ever in Frederick on a Saturday night. Midtown's also awesome. I will tell you in general way what it was like, how I got here, and what it's like today. Thank you very much, Billy, for having me out. Grateful to be here. I've never spoken for an hour, so we will see how this goes. I hopefully will get sober. I will have enough time to get sober in this talk. Again, very grateful to be here. I come from an alcoholic family. My dad is an alcoholic and an addict. I have lots of extended family that are addicts and alcoholics. The isms all over. I have lots of other family members that don't drink just because they've seen the effect that it has on our family. And there's the Al-Anon side of things that are all over my family as well. And I feel like I have that ism from the beginning. I'm somebody that I suffered from depression and anxiety from a young age. I was that kid even in elementary school. I would wake up sick to my stomach, throwing up a lot of mornings. Anytime I had a big test, I had to like get up in front of the class and talk to people like this in front of people, and talent shows, anything like that, I would wake up throwing up. I just always thought that I had the stomach bug all the time. I did not know I didn't realize until after I got sober that I had anxiety. I know now that I did. I also, in addition to like stomach issues, I would get hives all the time, like itching red. I can remember like sitting in high school, having a big test, like a midterm or a final exam, and just be itching. And I was taking medication called Atarax all the time because of hives. It's an antihistamine. Now they also prescribe that for anxiety. And I grew up like I took it like it was candy. I needed the Atarax because I would get itchy all the time, and that was also anxiety driven. And then I had depression too. I was just a depressed kid. I always felt less than. I grew up in Washington, D.C. In a very affluent neighborhood, but I grew up very poor. We only lived where we did because my mom was the resident manager of the apartment building that I grew up in. It was her job. The job came with the apartment, which I'm very fortunate. We grew up in a very nice environment that we would not have been able to afford normally, but I always felt less than it. And I probably, being the alcoholic that I am, I probably would have felt less than no matter what the circumstances were, but I always had a way to compare out because the other kids that I grew up around with were going on these fancy vacations to Florida and Europe. And the closest thing we had to a vacation is every summer, my mom would take us to my aunt's house. I grew up in DC, but the rest of my family's from Baltimore. I was telling Billy that before the meeting. My aunt lived in Dundalk, Maryland. I don't know if you all know that, but it's the suburbs of Baltimore. And my aunt lived in Dundalk with an above ground pool, and that was our vacation. In the back alley, the pool was in the alley, and I just and we didn't have a car. My mom doesn't drive. Everybody else had like fancy cars and computers in their houses and things that we just didn't have. And I always wanted, and I'm an alcoholic. I always wanted more. Whatever somebody else had, I wanted it. And I was just always focused on what I didn't have. My basic needs were met. We had food thanks to the government. We had a roof over our heads thanks to my mom's job. I had clothes on my back. I was the youngest. I have two older sisters, so they were usually used clothes, but I had them. And so I had the things that I needed, but I always wanted more of everything. And I was never grateful for anything that I had. But again, I always felt less than indifferent and was depressed. I had my first suicide attempt when I was 10 years old. And I couldn't get out of bed in the morning to go to school. And I ended up by the age of 13, I ended up in a psych ward for the first time for depression and suicide attempts. And I loved it. I went to a psychiatric hospital, Psychiatric Institute of Washington, PIW. And I guess coming from the dysfunctional family that I came from, being in that environment was just comforting. The structure and this, like, there was a schedule. I knew when food was going to be. I knew what to expect. And I liked it. And I would get out and then really just wanted to get back in. I liked being in the psych ward. Normal kids probably don't say that, but I enjoyed it. And yeah, I was suffering from a lot of depression and anxiety, but I was not diagnosed with anxiety. The depression was all that I was diagnosed with. And I ended up after another suicide attempt, and after I was in PIW a couple times and a couple other psych wards, and then I ended up in St. Elizabeth's Hospital in DC in the 90s. And I was 12 years old, and that was scary. I didn't, and I tried to talk my way out, and they wouldn't let me out. And I was there. I lived at St. Elizabeth's Hospital for like 2 or 3 months, I think, even through the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas. And that was, yeah, it was a scary time, but like that wasn't like, okay, don't want to be there again. So I after I got out of there, I pretty quickly discovered a group of friends. I was 13, about to t I was 12 actually. I was 12 at that time, about to be 13, and discovered friends that introduced me to weed when I was 13, and alcohol, and that helped me. It did. That depression and anxiety weren't as big of an issue anymore, because I found a solution. And for me, I always want more of everything, and it very quickly became a daily thing. My first drunk was New Year's Eve when I was 13. I was at a party I wasn't supposed to be at, and the kids were upstairs in the bedrooms with our party, and then the adults were having their party downstairs. And upstairs, we had, I think it was a six pack of beer between five of us, I would say, but I don't know how much I actually got to drink, but I was under 100 pounds, 5'2", and I managed to get drunk, and I loved the feeling. I felt like I was floating. I felt like I was like equal to other people, and I could look people in the eye, and I could have conversations. I could have fun. I felt cool. And I wanted to repeat that feeling as often as I could. I did get a ride home in a police car for the first time that night. I was not supposed to be at that party, and I was there with my best friend. Neither of us were supposed to be there. We lied to our moms, and the police came and gave us a ride home, which was actually a safe ride because there was an adult that was about to give us a ride home, and he had been drinking all night. So we got a safe ride home from the police in the back of the car. And I got home in the middle of the night, no real consequences. I'm not sure if my mom knew I'd been drinking, but she didn't say anything. And again, I wanted to get repeat that feeling as often as possible because I really liked the way it made me feel. And I did. I drank every chance that I could. Being 13 years old, it wasn't too often. And we did not have alcohol in the house. My parents divorced when I was very young. And because my dad's drinking, my mom did not have alcohol in the house. But I would steal it. I would steal it from stores. I would steal it from friends' parents or grandparents. I would spend time. I spent a lot of time trying to get alcohol. I would stand outside of stores and ask people to buy it for me. I grew up like right between a couple different universities. And so right across the street from the apartment I lived in were frat houses. And I would go over there when I was 14 and lie to the guys in the frat house and tell them that I was 16, because that's better. And let them have give me alcohol and buy alcohol for me. And yeah, I even one summer, that summer when I was 14, I had my first job. So I had money, and my best friend and I would go into a convenience store. We had a plan. Again, I grew up near the university. So our plan was to go into the store and talk about college. Because if we talked about college, then the clerk would think that we were in college and would sell us alcohol. So we spent an entire week going into the store talking about college and then tried to buy alcohol, and it did not work. But like that, I loved alcohol, and I just wanted to drink as much as I could and would go to any length to get alcohol. And again, I couldn't drink every day because I was 14, but weed was easier to get. It was a good substitute. Alcohol was always my drug of choice. I loved the effect produced by alcohol. And I would smoke weed if that was all that was available. But it something, some form of a mood altering substance became a daily thing for me very quickly. Again, I had my first drunk at 13, and by 14, I ended up in rehab. There was an intervention. My family sat me down, as well as my boyfriend at the time, sat me down in the middle of the night. I come home from a party. I am a blackout drinker. Once I take a drink, I cannot control the amount I consume, and I drink until I black out most times. And, my boyfriend didn't like it when I drank, because we'd go out to a party and I'd end up in the back making out with somebody else. Or a thing I did often is I would leave. If I was with friends or boyfriend, whoever I was with, like if there was a better opportunity, if somebody else showed up and they said, we're going to this other party where there's more things, I would just leave. And that night when I came home, when I had that little intervention from my family and boyfriend, we were in the woods drinking, because that's what we did. We were drinking in the woods, went to the Roy Rogers restaurant to use the restrooms. And I ran into another friend who had a car, and he was going to a party in Bethesda. So I just ditched my friends that I was with and got in the car and went to this other party. Came home hours later in the middle of the night, very drunk, and came home to my boyfriend, my mom, my cousin, all sat me down and told me I needed to get help. So a couple days later, I did go to rehab. I did not want to be there. I talked my way out in a week. My dad's an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just having fun. And that's what I thought. And, my experience, like a rehab's not going to help you if you don't want help. So I got out in a week, and, I did stop drinking though, because the pressure was on. My mom was on my case about drinking. I had been showing up to work. I did have a job at a Boys and Girls Club, and I babysat too. And I had gotten to the point where I was showing up under the influence to jobs. And my boyfriend did not like it when I drank. So I was also couldn't smoke weed anymore because I was on probation. And I was getting random drug testing, and I am a rule follower, except when it comes to alcohol. But I did not want to get into further trouble. So I wasn't doing other substances anymore. So I stopped. I stopped drinking and smoking weed, and it was encouraged that I go to AA. I grew up around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I grew up around Al-Anon. I knew AA was there, but it wasn't for, like, I thought, not for me. No thanks, but no thanks. And I would go to the 12-step clubhouse that was near my house, and I would go and bum cigarettes off people and smoke the smoke cigarettes and drink coffee. But I wouldn't go into the meetings. I even remember I went to a Halloween dance, an AA dance, right after I got out of rehab, but like wouldn't even go inside, like just smoke cigarettes. But did not want this. I knew it was there, but I didn't think I had a problem. But I did stop using and drinking. And that depression and anxiety came back. I was dry. I did not have that solution that alcohol had given me anymore. And I did that first year, like I did get it, I got my life together enough. I started going to school where I hadn't been going to school regularly for a long time leading up to that. And I started going to school and I got into a magnet high school that I was really excited about. But then within the 2 years in that high school, like I couldn't get out of bed in the mornings. I was still in that relationship with that boyfriend. He became my higher power during that time. Like all my decisions were based on that relationship. And I ended up dropping out of school in the 10th grade. I was in a magnet high school, as I said. I was really proud to be there, but I just couldn't get it together. And I couldn't get up in the morning and they were ready to kick me out. And my response to everything in life without a solution is I'm going to drop out before you kick me out. And so I dropped out of high school in the 10th grade when I was 17. And I started working in a restaurant. Actually, I was already working in a restaurant at that point. And again, just making bad decisions without substances. I was still hanging out with the same like people, places, and things. Hanging out in like kind of crack house places, hanging out in bars and pool halls, but wasn't drinking. I drank over the next 10 years from 14 to 24. I drank a handful of times, but not often. But when I did, it's to excess. I am an alcoholic, and I now know that I have an allergy to alcohol. Once I take a drink, I cannot predict what's going to happen. But during those 10 years, I drank a few times, usually to the point of blacking out or puking, but didn't drink often. So yeah, that I wasn't doing well, even though I was starting to get some outside things. I did get a good job. I got my GED. I did go back to school and started at college while working full time. I got married when I was 19 to that same boyfriend. And had my son when I was 21. And then when I was 24, he decided he didn't want to be married to me anymore and separated. I had 50-50 custody of my son, and I started going out. I owned a house. I had a car and a job, and I thought I had these things, and I started going out to happy hours with people from work. And should have seen earlier, but like my drinking was very different than my coworkers. They would go out, and I guess some of them are normal, and they would have one or two drinks and then go home. I don't do that. The only time that I would have like one or two drinks was if I was like stopping here and then going over there. Like I always had another place to go if I was going to drink more. Once I start, I can't stop. And I drank for about a decade after that, almost 10 years. And it's a progressive illness. It just kept getting worse and worse. I'm a blackout drinker. What always happened is I would come to and everybody's mad at me and I don't know why. People have blocked me. I get that look. I think all of us alcoholics know that look, that just disgust and like, how could you do it again? And I really didn't understand why. I would get myself, I would come to and not know where I am or who I'm with. I like to prefer myself to like the roll of the dice drunk. You never knew who you were going to get. I thought I was just fun and having a good time and everybody loves being around me. But I could be crying. I could get violent and punch you. I could be screaming. You just never knew what you were going to get once I take a drink. And I also traveled a lot for work back then. And I had an expense account and drank my dinners a lot. And I my job was very important to me. I a lot of my ego was in my job. If I put my priorities back then, like my job was the top priority. Then probably drinking, I don't know, drinking and my job were pretty like much up there. My family was somewhere below there. And my job was very important to me. And jobs are important because I needed the money to support my drinking. And I didn't think of the consequences. Like I would drink and drive on business trips. I would embarrass myself a lot at work events, and just think that that's normal. Like my drinking life became the normal one. It really did, and it was chaotic. And I never thought of the consequences. Like what would happen if I got arrested in Germany? Like I drove in blackouts in a country that I didn't speak the language. I came to once in a blackout in Germany on a work trip, going the wrong way on a one-way street. It's like, oops, I guess I shouldn't have done that. But thankfully, like I didn't, thankfully I never got caught. And to me, like when I worked the steps, like something that was clear to me, but I was an atheist when I got here. And I thought the second step, it was a little bit of a struggle for me, but like, I could look back on my drinking because I'm a blackout drinker. I drank and drove a lot. I could at least see that something was looking out for me and got me home safe every night because it wasn't me. I was not being responsible behind the wheel. But something was looking out for me. And yeah, I would get myself into a lot of crazy situations and I isolated a lot. Like I would get to the bar and just, I didn't know how to talk to people. I have a lot of social anxiety. I would have told you when I got sober that I don't like people, but in reality, I'm just scared of people. And so I didn't know how to interact with people without a drink in me. And I would get to the bar because I was a bar drinker because I didn't want to be drinking home alone. So I'd go to the bar, but I would just sit there. I had like a little handheld Tetris game that I carried in my purse and I would play that at the bar. I would read. And then a couple drinks into me and then I'm making friends with people around me. Yeah, I just didn't know how to interact with people without a drink in me. And thankfully when I did get sober, my first service position was greeting people at the meeting, like putting my hand out and shaking hands. And that is exactly what I needed because it taught me how to interact with people without a drink, and forced me to put myself out there. I kept isolating more and more when I was drinking, even though I like being around people. So I wasn't drinking alone. Like I drank at home too. And I did get remarried, and met a guy in a bar. Don't recommend that. He drank like I did. And there was a lot of fighting. There was a lot of holes in the walls. We drank at each other. We both just did stuff in black. I was the blackout drinker. I don't know about him, but like doing stuff. And then we just, it was always like trying to like one up the other one. Like you did this to me, screw you. I'm going to go do that. And yeah, we got married and we were fighting a lot. And we ended up going to a marriage counselor within a few months. It was very quickly after we got married. And the marriage counselor told us that he couldn't help us until my now ex-husband, but my husband at the time, until he got sober. And the reason for that is my ex-husband's very quiet and I do a lot of the talking, and I would talk in these sessions with the therapist and talk about his drinking because his drinking was the problem. Drinking was not my problem; it was his problem. And I eventually, like, it was encouraged that I go to Al-Anon and that he gets sober. And that was like, thanks, but no thanks. And we ended, it ended up, oh, I did go to AA shortly after that, after one of my bad weekends. I was caught in a blackout, cheating on my husband, and went to an AA meeting to get into the good graces. And I tried to stop drinking many times over the years, and I could never get past 30 days on my own. I always wanted to do it on my own. I would look up non-religious recovery programs. I would look up treatment centers, but I always changed my mind. I always found a reason to drink. And so about 9 months before my current sobriety date, I did go to an AA meeting and I got a 24-hour chip, and then thought that was going to keep me sober. The people there were very nice. They wanted to make plans with me and get my phone number. And I was like, thanks, but no thanks. I got this. And I didn't have it. I every time I would stop drinking, things just get so miserable and I can't stand it anymore. And I always find a reason to drink again. And that time was no different. I went on a business trip at about 30 days without a drink, and I made it over on the plane without drinking. And then the first night I was in Germany, I used to travel there for work a lot. And the first night there, my coworker ordered a drink at dinner. I had no intention of drinking, and I ordered a drink because I have no defense against the first drink, and I had no other solution. I just didn't know how else to answer when the server asked me what I wanted to drink. And so I ordered a drink, and it's off to the races again. And then a few months later, my husband ended up, it got to the point where I was kicking him out for his drinking and told him he couldn't come back unless he got sober. And he did get sober and told me I could continue to drink, but it was his problem. We got rid of the alcohol. And I will just say, like, he came home that night when I wouldn't let him in, and I kicked him out. I called his dad. His dad came and picked him up because I wouldn't let him in the house. And first thing I did after his dad came and picked him up, went to the fridge, got a beer, and sat down and drank, because that, like, alcohol was my only solution to life. I did not know how else to deal with life without alcohol. So he stopped drinking. I continued to drink for another 45 days. And he started saying things to me, because he went to an outpatient treatment center and started going to some AA meetings. And then he just started saying to me, like, next time you go out, why don't you just have one? And that, I would laugh at him. Like, that was a foreign concept to me. I don't understand having one. And somehow it clicked. He said it enough times. The last time I went out for happy hour with a coworker, and had four beers. And my husband, when I got home, he asked me, how many drinks did you have? And I said four. But it was the tall ones. Like, I was economical. I'm very cheap. And I'm not going to waste my time with, like, the little beers. I got the big ones because that's more economical. And I'm going to drink them. No matter what's in front of me, I'm going to drink it. Bartenders used to call me Mikey because, like, whatever. I would drink anything. And he looked at me in all honesty. Like, he meant it. He was sincere. Like, what happened to just having one? And I'm like, I don't know. And at the end of my drinking, like, having those four tall beers was what I needed just to feel normal, just to stop the shakes, to be able to look you in the eye and have a conversation. I didn't know how to live life without alcohol. And so I stopped drinking. And something clicked in my head that night when he asked me, like, what happened to just having one? And I realized that, okay, maybe my drinking's not normal either. And I tried to do this on my own again. I was going to Al-Anon. For those that don't know, Al-Anon is another 12-step fellowship for friends and family of alcoholics and addicts. But Al-Anon, I would go on Saturdays it was, to me, it was Saturday morning. It was a noon. It was a noon meeting, but that was a Saturday morning to me. I would go there hungover on Saturday mornings and just bitch about my husband. Al-Anon was not helping me. Al-Anon does help me. I am a double winner. I go to both fellowships and it does help me today. But at the time I needed to treat my alcoholism. And I stopped drinking and wanted to do this on my own. Didn't think I needed AA. And when I don't have alcohol as a solution, in the book, it talks about restless, irritable, and discontent. Yes, I do feel that way. But to me, I describe it like I can't stand to be in my own skin. I get lonely and depressed. And I was empty. I was just so emotionally empty and drained when I got here this time. And I was home on a Tuesday night with about 25 days without a drink and ready to go to the bar because I just couldn't stand to be by myself anymore. And over the years, again, I tried to stop drinking so many times and it always got to that point, that same point of just, I can't do this on my own anymore. I'm going to go to the bar and I'm going to go and I'm just going to order Diet Coke and be around people because I don't want to be alone. But every time I would do that, I'd end up changing my mind and drinking. And so this time I knew if I was honest with myself, if I went to the bar, I would drink. So instead, I looked up online and I found an AA meeting that was about to start near my house. And I went to that AA meeting and I related. It was a women's meeting and they were really nice. And I cried and introduced myself. I'm Chrissy, I'm an alcoholic. It's the first time I think I'd ever said those words. I didn't truly believe it yet, but I at least related and wanted to fit in. So I said it. And the ladies after the meeting wanted to make a plan with me. They wanted to go to another meeting, get my phone number. Again, I was still reluctant. I was like, thanks, but no thanks. But I went back. I went to another meeting. That was a Tuesday night. I went to a meeting on Thursday night, also near my house because it was convenient. Convenient was very important to me when I was new. My life had become so small when I was drinking. I worked, drank, and lived all in the same town. I didn't really leave. It was a town called Germantown, Maryland, and I didn't really leave Germantown. And so convenience was important to me in the beginning. So I went to a meeting right up the street from my house on Thursday. And I met the woman that would become my sponsor that night. She came up to me after the meeting and made a plan with me. That was on Thursday. Saturday was going to be my 30 days. And so she made a plan with me to take me to a meeting to get my 30-day chip and to get coffee before the meeting. And I made the plan with her, exchanged numbers. And she called me the next day to confirm. And I actually picked up the phone. It was so uncomfortable. I felt like the phone weighed 1,000 pounds, but I actually picked it up and I confirmed the plan with her. And then on Saturday, I actually showed up to meet with her. And that gave me so much anxiety, like meeting with a stranger and talking to somebody on the phone. But I went. Because I was desperate. I was finally willing to give this a try, even though it was uncomfortable. And I didn't think it was for me. I had this impression of AA as being a religious program, and I was an atheist. And I grew up around AA, and I just saw you guys often met in churches, and you held hands, and you said prayers. And I'm like, that's not for me. No, thank you. And it took me a little while to realize that AA is a spiritual program, not a religious program. But I went and met with her and we talked before the meeting and I was honest with her and she asked me, why are you here? And my response was, I'm tired of blacking out and coming to, and everybody's mad at me and I don't know why. Because that just kept happening over and over again. And she told me, and she's told me since that this isn't exactly how she said it, but how I remember it is she told me normal people don't black out every time they drink. I think what she actually said is like, a normal person wouldn't continue to drink that way if they kept blacking out. But I just heard that normal people don't black out when they drink. And that was like enough to like make me think like, oh, my drinking's not normal. That like, because normal, and again, to be a black, an alcoholic, you do not have to black out. But for me, I did black out most times. And it's like time traveling. I don't know what happened. And that would scare people, I think. But for me, it was just, that was just the price to pay. That like, I want to get this effect produced by alcohol. And okay, I guess I have to deal with this blacking out. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's not normal. Like alcoholics do that. So we went to the meeting, and it was a meeting. It's not around anymore, but it's called Gaithersburg Young People. And they were reading We Agnostics that night from the big book. And I didn't understand. It was like, I think Charlie Brown, where the adults are just like chattering and you don't know what they're actually saying. That's what hearing We Agnostics was for me. I didn't understand the words, but I at least knew the chapter was called We Agnostics. And that was enough for me to be like, okay, if there's a chapter about atheists and agnostics, then maybe there's a place for me here. And it was enough for me to like open up and have open-mindedness and willingness to like give this a try. And so Jenny became my sponsor that night. I was so scared. As I said, I'm scared of people. I don't know if I would have asked her to be my sponsor. But she thankfully opened up the window for me and said that she was available for sponsorship if I wanted her to be my sponsor. And so that gave me the opportunity to ask her to be my sponsor. Cause I don't, even though I wanted her to, I was too scared to ask because people are scary. Rejection is scary. So she became my sponsor and she told me to call her every day and to go to a meeting every day. And if I couldn't go to a meeting every day, I had to call 6 other women from AA. So I went to a meeting every day for my first 18 months because I did not want to have to call 6 women. That was scary to me. So my son was 11 when I got sober. I had not been there present for him for a while. Like I would leave him home when I was out drinking. I would lie to him and tell him I was working late when I was really at the bar. But then I started going to AA meetings and it did take a while. He didn't trust me. Like I would come home from AA and he was still like, Mom, have you been drinking again? Like he used to ask me when I had been drinking. And it took a year or two before he stopped asking me, like where he actually trusted that I was not drinking. And I was going to AA, but I did have to be home some nights. So I couldn't go to a meeting every night. So I wasn't going to call 6 other women. So I would go to meetings on my lunch break. I found ways to get to a meeting every day. I just made the time. And I did whatever Jenny told me to do because I did not want to go back to the way I was feeling before because I was so empty. I was miserable and sad. It always gets me whenever I celebrate, my sponsor talks about meeting me that first night because she will just, the way she describes me, I know it's true, but it's just so far from who I am today. But like, I was just so sad. And I remember feeling that way. And I've seen other people in the rooms, like running out from the meeting and just look, like I can look at them in the meeting and know how scared and sad they are because that's how I felt when I first got here. Jenny and I quickly started working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Some people have that pink cloud I hear about. I don't remember a pink cloud. I used to be a very depressed person. Like, so I was still very sad and angry. For at least 18 months into sobriety. And around 18 months is when things like started to change and I started to feel a little better. And I wasn't so angry anymore. And I was in a meeting once about 18 months sober. And after the meeting was just kind of like giddy and like couldn't stand still. And my sponsor comes up and asks me how I'm doing. And I'm like, I don't know. I just I'm feeling like I don't know, and like I couldn't describe, I could not put words to my feelings. And she just looked at me in all sincerity and was like, "That's joy that you're feeling." And like I was feeling joy, and I didn't know how to describe it. Like I saw a therapist in early sobriety, and she would pull out these pictures that are probably for kids of like the emojis, and like I would have to like point to the emoji feelings to describe how I'm feeling about things, because I just couldn't put words to it. Because I had masked my feelings for so long with alcohol. And I grew up in a dysfunctional family, so we did not talk about our feelings. We did not talk about things at home. So I had to learn in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to like express how I feel. And yeah, things started to get better. I started to feel better over time. I worked through, when I had a year sober, I had gotten through, I think, through step 11 probably at my 1 year. And then continued to work, and I got through step 12 in that second year. And I started sponsoring other women, and that really helped me a lot, kept me in the book. And I did, at about 18 months sober, I went back to school. I would have told you when I got sober that I was in school. I had been in college for a while. I hadn't finished a class in 6 years when I got sober. I wanted to get my degree, but I would register for class and then I would get anxiety and drop the class, because I was just so scared of failing. Because at one point I had started taking two classes at a time instead of one, and got overwhelmed and dropped both classes. So each time I registered after that, I would just, that fear would come in, and I just couldn't do it. And drinking was also, school was getting into the way of my drinking. So drinking was the priority. And when I was in school, I would stop drinking for a period of time so that I could focus on school. But it was a vicious cycle, and I just couldn't get it together enough to finish a class for 6 years when I got sober. And so I did go back to school at 18 months sober. And I was a single mom. I did get divorced when I had like 2 years, two, almost 3 years sober. I realized like my ex-husband was also, we were both sober. But I was getting better, and I was realizing that he was just an angry, miserable person, and I had been too, but I wasn't anymore, and I couldn't stay in that angry relationship any longer. I got to the point I would come home and see his truck, and just cringe that I would have to go inside and deal with that anger, and I didn't want to be in that. I didn't want my son to be in that anymore. So I did get divorced, because I deserve happiness, and I didn't realize that before. I just settled for things before, and I realized I have a choice, and I can choose to be happy. And yeah, got a divorce, and so I was a single mom again. And in all honesty, I didn't have much help, so I was a single mom through all of that anyway, and I continued in school one class at a time. I did get I got an associate's degree. It took me 17 years to get an associate's degree, and then another 5 years I got a bachelor's degree. I did discover during that time I'm a perfectionist. I was working the steps and like taking an inventory and realizing like part of that fear of why I could never do things. I would talk, I would get drunk and talk about all the things I planned to do, but I never actually did anything because I had fear. I'm afraid of failing. If I'm not going to do anything, if I can't do it perfectly, I'm just not even going to try. And I had to look at that. And like in school is where it would like really come out. Like I would get, I took a class once where I was getting 100% on everything. It was a music class, which was fun. It was a rock history class, highly recommend it. And I kept getting hundreds on everything. And then I got a 98 on one of the quizzes. And I was beating myself up so much for getting this 98, not getting the 100%. And my sponsor, I think it was, that asked me, like, well, what is that? Like, what letter grade is that? It's an A. Okay, like an A is an A, and like I'm beating myself up over 2 points. And even if it's a B, that's not the end of the world. I'm still going to pass the class. Like, and I really just had to accept where I am and I'm doing the best that I can. And like, I'm not going to be perfect all the time. And like, I start as taking an inventory, like I started seeing that I can fail at things and I'm not going to die over it. Like I work in IT. I work in technology, and I used to be a government contractor, and I had to get a cybersecurity certification. And cybersecurity is not my area of expertise, but being a government contractor, it was required. So I studied for 6 months and I failed the exam the first time I took it. And I was horrified because I had to go back to my manager and tell him that I did not pass the test. And I had so much anxiety. Like, I called him first thing in the morning on Monday morning and told him, and it's like, okay, well, you'll just take it again. And that was just, I couldn't, like, to me, it's the worst thing in the world, and I'm gonna have to quit my job before they fire me. And like, and that's my reaction to things. Like, still, like, I have 11 years sober, and like, if I make a little mistake at something, I think I have to quit before I get fired. Instead of just go, like, I've had to learn to just go and own up to it. And how can we correct this and move on? And like, it's not the end of the world that it is in my head. And yeah, we like, I failed and it was okay. I learned what I needed to do to study more and pass the test the second time. And I could do things even though I might fail. And like, that might be simple to some people, but to me, that was just, instead of, I'm going to run. I like to run from things that are scary and uncomfortable, and I can walk through things one foot in front of the other. And I've had to do some hard things in sobriety. The third step was very hard for me. I like to control everything. And one thing that I've really struggled with in my sobriety with turning over is my son. He's 23 now, which is just like, wow. But when he was a teenager, he's a lot like me. He had his own struggles. He was in some psych wards, like had substance use issues, was in AA for a little while. And I remember when I took him to his first treatment center in California, we never have to do anything alone. I've learned that throughout my sobriety. It continues to be true today. I just have to learn to turn things over and like trust that things will be okay. And he's got his own higher power. And throughout that experience, I had to learn that. But I took him to his first treatment center in California, flew him out there. And I had a few hours after dropping him off before my flight. I was taking the red eye home, and I'm very stressed. Like, this is not a comfortable situation, but with those few hours, like, what do I do when I'm in a city I'm not familiar with? Like, I go to AA. And I went to a meeting, went early, like, met some nice women, and it was exactly where I needed to be. Like, I've just been trained in these rooms to put one foot in front of the other and keep taking the actions and doing what works. So I went to an AA meeting, got a ride to the airport afterwards. And yeah, I did. I took the actions, but I was at the airport that night, and it was still a very stressful day. And I was sitting there getting dinner, but there was like a beer tap. And I'm still having the thought, like, a beer would be really nice right now. And I just have to use my tools. And at that time, it was like close to midnight in California, so it was the middle of the night here. And so, like, I just have to pray in that situation. And I was able to get through it, got to an AA meeting the next day, and just have to keep taking the actions that work. And I don't have to do anything alone. I also made amends to my dad. My dad and I hadn't talked when I was 12 in one of the psychiatric hospitals. I had told him to get out of my life. He's an alcoholic and addict. He'd been in and out of my life my whole life when I was little. And like, I just kind of blamed him for all my problems and told him, just leave me alone, just go. And he did. And I saw him a few times over the years, but I tried to reach out to him, tried to make plans over the years, and a lot of just disappointment. And he's a wanderer. I didn't know where he was. And so when I got to the ninth step to make my amends, that was going to be a no way in hell, is what I told my sponsor. Like, I'm not doing that. Cause he hurt me. But she's like, well, you're going to have to make those amends at some point. I'll tell you when. And this one I had like a year sober, and she came back to me the next day, literally the next day. It's like, I talked to my sponsor about it, and you need to find him and you need to make those amends to him. I have, in order for me to heal, I have to repair those relationships. Cause he was something that I drank over. I drank over my ex-husbands. I drank over, my father. Like, I would sit and cry and drink. And, so I started looking for him at a year sober, and he doesn't have Facebook. He doesn't have a computer. Like, I found some mugshots of him online. So I'd also found a cousin on Facebook and like got some information. Last I had heard prior to that, he had been in New Orleans. But I found out from a cousin, he's actually in California, and that's why I narrowed it down to California, and I found the mugshots. So I knew he was out there, but I couldn't find like a phone number for him. And I always kind of knew that my mom had a way to contact him, but I wasn't comfortable asking my mom for his number. So I tried to do it on my own. I'm so self-sufficient. My self-sufficiency is going to kill me, is what my sponsor always tells me. And so I was going to try and find him, and I couldn't. And everything happens for a reason. Like, one of his sisters reached out to me at one point on Facebook and asked if I had a phone number for him. And I'm like, I don't, but my mom does. And so I asked my mom for his phone number for my Aunt Carol, and got the number, gave it to her. But then now I also had his number. And then I didn't have the willingness to do anything with it. And fear. I mean, fear runs so much of my life. And I didn't know. I didn't have the willingness. Where I had the willingness when I was looking for him, and then I no longer had the willingness. So I talked to my sponsor about it. I talked to a friend in the program who had a similar experience with his dad. And I had to pray. I had to pray for the willingness. And finally, it was probably about a year later after I had his number that I finally had the willingness to reach out to him in March of 2020. And I called him on Sunday before my home group at Midtown, which would be, it was the Sunday, the last, we were just talking about this before, it was the Sunday, the last Sunday before the world shut down, in last meeting in person. I called him, and he was driving when I called, and actually his girlfriend answered the phone, like, who's this? Like very defensive about the woman calling. But I talked to my dad, and he pulled over, and we're both just crying. And I was able to open up that door, and we started talking. And I told him that I'm in recovery now. Like, I need to reach out. I need to make things right between us. And he told me at that time that I had 5 years sober at that point. 2026. I had 6 years sober. Sorry. All right. Almost 6 years. And he had 2 years sober. He had 2.5 years sober when I reached out to him. And everything happens in God's time, in our higher power's time, when it's supposed to happen. Had I reached out to him when I had 1 year sober, when I was originally given the direction, he was in active addiction. And our conversation, our relationship would not have gone the same way. And yeah, I we do things when they're supposed to happen, when we have the willingness. Everything happens in our higher power's time. And then the world started shutting down and we started talking. I mean, for a while it was like almost every day he was calling me. And he did know some things about me. He knew where I lived, he knew I had a child. Like somehow he had kind of kept up on me over the years, even though I thought he never thought about me. And we just started talking regularly. And a couple years into the pandemic, I in May of 2022, I flew out to California with a friend. I originally was going to go by myself in January that year because my best friend couldn't go with me. And so I was going to go by myself, but then the COVID started to get worse again in January. So I decided to cancel the trip because I was very cautious. And so I postponed the trip and didn't go in January by myself. So in May, I went. My best friend was running a marathon on the West Coast. And so we made the trip. We went to Seattle and then we went down to California together. And I got to see my dad for the first time in like 25 plus years. And yeah, it was uncomfortable, but also like it was a great experience. And we do have a great relationship today. And I just went and visited him again in January this year. We still talk on a regular basis. We each have our own higher power. Like his program looks nothing like mine. He hasn't been to a meeting in probably over 6 years. Although he did go with us in January. He went and picked up a chip when we were out there. But yeah, we each have our own higher power, and he has not taken a drink in 7 years, and I have my father in my life. Like it's still the uncomfortable relationship sometimes, and he's still unfamiliar to me, but he is my father, and I didn't think that was possible. I did not think I would ever have a relationship with that man. But we do. I will probably talk to him tonight because it's Sunday. He usually calls me. He knows I'm in the car on Sunday nights driving home an hour from my home group. So he calls me on Sunday nights and we talk. So these are gifts that we get in the program and I didn't expect them. I have a lot of joy in my life. I have a lot of amazing people in my life today. And like, I didn't think I needed people because that's uncomfortable, but I do need people and I do deserve joy and love in my life. And I get the gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm so blessed to be here. And I'm grateful that I'm not the person that I was when I got here, but also grateful for that person because that got me to where I am today. Thank you for letting me share.
Yeah.